Welcome to the Faith Driven Entrepreneur Podcast. If you're an entrepreneur driven by your faith or want to be driven by your faith, then you're in the right place. The best way to stay connected with us is to sign up for our monthly newsletter, faithdrivenentrepreneur.org. This podcast doesn't exist without you, our community, and we would love the opportunity to connect with you in person. One way to do that is to join us in Dallas this September 24th through the 25th at the National Faith Driven Entrepreneur Conference at Watermark Community Church in Dallas, Texas. We'll be recording live episodes and joined by friends like Andy Crouch, Phil Vischer, and the leaders of this movement. Go to our website to register. While you're there, please send us any thoughts you have about how this podcast might better serve you or any questions you might have about being a faith-driven entrepreneur.
We may not be able to connect by wrapping our arms around people and hugging. We may have to connect in other ways. And it's going to take a different level of intentionality. And I think it's going to take a different approach. And I think our healthcare system will change as well. I think never have I been more confident that home healthcare is a really great place to be, because when you think about the spread of viruses, you think about those facilities that I mentioned where there's congregant living, you know, we have an opportunity in home healthcare, even if that patient is sick with COVID-19, to take care of them in an isolated fashion where their risk of exposure to others is limited. And so I think home care is going to be a big part of that. I think physician house calls is going to be a growing part of our healthcare system. And I think telemedicine is going to prove to be a growing part of our healthcare system. And so there are things that would have taken probably years to evolve in a normal cycle that are evolving in days and weeks.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Faith Driven Entrepreneur Podcast. On behalf of Henry, William, and myself, I'm Rusty. We just want to say thanks. Thanks for downloading us week after week and sharing the message out and just spending a little time with us. You know, today we're excited because we're going to share a conversation with April Anthony. April's the founder and CEO of Encompass Home Health. Her entrepreneurial journey, it actually started when she took over a company in her 20s and then grew it into one of the most successful home healthcare businesses. Today, she shares with us what that journey looked like, but also she shared and gave us insight into what it looks like for our heroes, our healthcare workers, who are currently on the front lines fighting against COVID-19. Henry, take it away.
Welcome back to the Faith Driven Entrepreneur Podcast. We are live in the virtual studio with April Anthony. This has been an episode I've been looking forward to for a while. April has been a great success at scale and has been encouragement to many of us at Faith Driven Entrepreneur and then as an extension Sovereigns Capital, and eager to have her on to tell her story. And so, April, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
So,
Anything to have a little distraction from the COVID crisis is welcomed at this time.
Good. Well, I'll tell you, we are indeed that. We are a great distraction. And this is indeed a time that we actually have heard back from a lot of people that it's great to be able to unplug and get on an exercise bike or something like that and go for a run and listen to us. And that's just a great encouragement. So yes, we are a distraction for many. And I think that we always just love hearing stories about how God has worked through people in their lives. And so we'd love to start off at the beginning of your story. Take us just back to growing up, and then you came at being an entrepreneur from accounting, I think, but take us back to the beginning. Tell us your story, please.
Sure. So it's a little bit of an atypical story from an entrepreneurial perspective. I grew up in Houston, Texas, went to CAT school at Abilene Christian, and completed a degree in accounting and went to work back in Houston with Pricewaterhouse, and really thought accounting was where I was meant to be. My dad was an accountant. My two older brothers were an accountant. It seemed genetically like the right place to be in my family, and things were going well down that path. My husband and I married about 2 years after I graduated from ACU. And as part of our marriage, I relocated to the Dallas office. And when I did, I found myself a little bit sort of thrown into the melting pot. I had been an oil and gas specialist in the Houston region, but when I came to Dallas, there weren't too many oil and gas clients. I kind of got thrown into the hodgepodge, did a little bit of everything. And when the first busy season came to an end after we were newlyweds, my husband said, "Hey, that wasn't very fun." And I said, "You should have been me. It was really not fun if you were the one working the long nights and weekends." And so we agreed that probably looking for a different alternative would make sense. I really didn't think that I would work long term. I really was looking for just kind of a short term job, something I could do for a year or two as we saved a little money and move forward with starting a family. And I proceeded to my ultimate calling, or at least what I thought was my calling at the time, which was to be a stay-at-home mom. And so when busy season came to an end, I started looking, and lo and behold, it was a good time in the economy. And I got 4 job offers within just the first couple of weeks of putting my resume out. One of them was with a home healthcare company. I had never done anything in healthcare. I didn't have any experience there, but something about that particular opportunity was attractive to me. My husband tells me that it was the one job where I was to be the controller in charge of the accounting function. He tells me I just like to be in charge of things. And so I was drawn to it for that reason. But so I decided I would choose that option, and I moved over into the healthcare space, really having no experience in any kind of healthcare. I had done oil and gas and banking and even some retail related organizations in my audit career, but nothing in healthcare. But when I arrived on the scene in a healthcare company, a home healthcare company, one of the first things I discovered is that one of the 4 subsidiaries of the company I had gone to work for was in a bit of a financial crisis. And based on the way home healthcare was structured back in those days, it was considered a cost reimbursed industry. And so what that meant was that Medicare every year would set a limit, and they would say, as long as you spend less than X, we'll pay you what you spent. But if you spend over X, we'll only reimburse you up to that threshold. Well, as I began to put together the financials for these 4 separate subsidiaries, I discovered that one of them was well in excess of that Medicare limit. So I went to the owner and I said, hey, listen, these 3 look great, but I think you have a problem over here on this 4th provider number. What do you want to do about that? Well, if you're in a business that can't make money, you sure don't want to lose money. And so his first response was, well, let's sell it. And I thought, I wonder who buys money-losing, cost-reimbursed businesses. That could be a bit of a challenge. But I proceeded to take it on, and I started having some conversations. And as you might imagine, those conversations didn't go very far when people figured out that, in fact, we were way over the limits, and we were probably going to lose more money before the end of the year. And so everybody would say, not that interesting. We think we'll pass. And so a couple weeks into my efforts, I went back to the owner and I was just going to report kind of my activity. And if you knew me, you would know that I am a super competitive person. I just really don't like to lose at anything. And so as I was describing what I had been doing, it started to sound a whole lot like failure to me. Not being a person who enjoys failing, I immediately came up with an alternative solution, one that I hadn't given much thought, but I said these words, well, what if I just buy it? And he said, sold. And I said, well, wait a minute, buy, probably not the operative word. I can't buy it. I don't have any money. What I really meant is, why don't you just give it to me? Because if we just sort of took it out of the family of your businesses, and I didn't have that big overhead infrastructure you have, maybe I could actually get under the Medicare limit by the end of the calendar year. Again, he said, sold. And again, I said, well, my new husband might have an opinion about this. Maybe I should go home and talk to him about this first. So sure enough, I drove home that night thinking, gosh, I have got to have a better sales pitch with Mark than I have had with all these other folks I've talked to. And so I bounded in the back door and I said, honey, good news. We're going to buy a home health agency. And he said, with what? And I said, that's the better news. They're just going to give it to us. And he proceeded to ask why and how that would all work. And I sort of explained my grand plan. And finally, after listening intently for a while, he said, I just really have one question. What do you know about home health care? I said, oh, I don't know anything about home health care, but it just doesn't seem that hard. And with those auspicious words, I returned the next day, and within a few days thereafter became the owner of a money-losing, cost-reimbursed business at the ripe old age of 25 with 58 days of experience in the home healthcare industry. And so I didn't know much about what I was getting into, but I definitely knew that I didn't have any money to lose. And so really my first act was to go in and lay off a lot of our back office staff, keep our clinicians out in the field, but I had to lean out the expense structure and lay off some of those folks that were in the back office. And so as I did so, I found myself wearing a lot of hats. I was not only doing the financials, but I was also now in charge of the billing, and I was in charge of the hiring, and I was in charge of the medical records and everything that was kind of could be done in the back office by a non-clinician. Those were the things that I was doing. And part of that was sales and marketing. So sure enough, one afternoon, I thought I had developed a pretty good elevator pitch, and I went out to make some sales calls to physicians. And the first few didn't go very well. I pretty much got rejected at the door. And moved on to the next place. And finally, by the afternoon, I found an office that would let me in. And so I popped in the office and I thought, okay, here's my chance. I'm going to drop my great elevator pitch on them and get a sale before the end of the meeting. And sure enough, the doctor walked by and he started asking me questions. You know, what do you do when a patient has CHF? I remember thinking to myself, I wonder what CHF is, and quickly discovered that I really didn't have much to offer to this conversation. And so sure enough, I walked out of the door and I thought, I got to have a different plan. So I went back to the office that afternoon. I started calling our nurses and therapists, and I said, hey, can I just spend the next couple of weeks riding with you? Can I go with you one day and somebody else the next? And for 2 weeks, I scheduled ride-alongs with different clinicians, thinking maybe if I could just understand what home care was really about, what we were doing in the field, and they could teach me about some of these diagnostic terms, maybe I could figure out how to be successful. And I can literally say that that 2 week period changed the course of my life. Even after having, you know, bought the agency, I thought, well, I'll just do this for a little while. It'll kind of be a side gig that I can have maybe after we begin to have a family. But instead, when I went on those ride-alongs and I began to see patients in their home, and I began to see the impact that our clinicians were making, and I began to see the way our patients were being not only cared for, but loved by our people, I really could feel the mission and the calling of what home health care is. And so here I sit 28 years later, having never been a stay-at-home mom, having never done some of the things that on the day I bought my first home health agency, I thought I would do. But instead, having served literally millions of patients over the course of the last 28 years and wow, employed hundreds of thousands of employees along the way, and really have found what has been just an amazing blessing in my life along the way. I did end up with a great family as well. We have three children that are now 25, 22, and be 20 next week, actually. So 25, 22, and almost 20. And so we did have a great family, but I was never a stay-at-home mom, never was the PTA president or head of the tennis league like I thought I would be, but had some pretty amazing experiences as an alternative.
April William here. Thank you so much for walking through that amazing history. And it's just always fun to hear entrepreneur journeys. I just feel like God takes everyone on a unique one. And thank you for walking us through that. And I'd love to take a minute to just double down a little bit on what Encompass Home Healthcare does, and maybe just walk our audience through what a regular day, both in the life of you and some of your employees who are seeing patients every day, just walk us through a little bit of the details of what the company does from a day-to-day perspective.
Sure. So in home health care, our staff obviously don't report to a hospital or a facility, but our patients have generally come out of those settings and they're headed home now, but they're generally not fully back to their full level of rehab potential. Maybe they've had a stroke and they've spent some time in a hospital or in a rehab facility, but now they're trying to get home and get the rest of their independence back. Our clinicians will come in and provide that ongoing therapy, make those adaptive changes that they need to make in order to be able to be successful, you know, not on the slick halls of a hospital that has a handrail, but in their home where they've got perhaps a pet or an animal, where they've got maybe uneven flooring or upstairs that they have to go to a bedroom and so forth. So our therapy team will come in and try to create those final steps of recovery so that the patient can be safe and independent in their home. If it's a nursing diagnosis, perhaps they're dealing with a patient that's got multiple chronic comorbid conditions. Maybe they've got heart failure and hypertension, diabetes all going on at the same time. And so our nurses will come in and train that patient on signs and symptoms, things that they should be concerned with, to know that their disease process perhaps is going to turn into something that could result in a rehospitalization. So we've got amazing people who go out from home to home, seeing, you know, anywhere from 5 to 6, sometimes 7 patients a day as they drive around their respective communities caring for patients in that home setting.
That's great. And as you, once again, a lot of entrepreneur stories, you know, you kind of backed into where you are today. You know, you woke up with a business at 25 and said, I've got to figure out how to learn it. And I'm interested if there was a point where, you know, as you walked along that journey with God, where it did turn from, you know, a job that you happened to end up in home health care to something that, you know, he really gave you a passion for. And when I say that, I really like to think back to, you know, the Latin root of passion, meaning to suffer. And, you know, coming off of Easter a few months ago, right, is that's what that word really means, is we're willing to give so much because we care so much about the outcome. And just maybe if you could walk us through how God walked you through that journey to where it's something that you truly became passionate about.
Yeah, I think it really happened in those early first couple weeks of riding along, because, you know, I was an accountant by training. I didn't know anything about clinical settings. I'd come from a family of folks that had been pretty healthy. I hadn't spent much time in or around the healthcare setting. And so, you know, just those first few weeks of driving up to the front of a home, parking the car outside, ringing the doorbell, I just remember being so anxious about, man, I don't really want to go into this setting. I don't know what I'm going to find. And, you know, the very first patient visit that I ever went on was a woman who lived in a low-income neighborhood with a house that was in a pretty good state of disrepair, who was in her late 80s, who lived alone, who had no family in the region to care for her. And the thing I remember most about that visit was not just the environment itself. What I remember is that when the doorbell rang and she opened the door to our nurse, the first thing they did was embrace. The first thing they did was wrap their arms around each other and show this true connection and this true compassion for one another. And I remember standing back kind of sheepishly watching this whole thing transpire and just thinking, this is really a cool opportunity. It seems like the kind of work that you do on a mission trip, on a day when you're going to go help, you know, the elderly and the needy and those who are less fortunate than we are. And, you know, our team did that every day, all day, for 6 or 7 patients a day. And when I started thinking about what that could be and what that could look like and how we could manage through that, I was really passionate about the care that we could deliver. But you might imagine by the time I would kind of get to the afternoons of those days, you know, my brain would be swelling with clinical jargon and clinical lingo. And I remember finally just saying, hey, I can't take anymore. Can you just tell me about you? Tell me about how you got to our company. Tell me what your history is. And as I started to listen to different nurses and therapists and certified nurse aides that I would ride along with, I started to realize after a few days and a few different people that they all had really similar stories, that they sounded something like, you know, I became a nurse because even as a teenager, I knew I wanted to be in the caregiving business. So I went to nursing school. When I got out, I started working in the hospital, and 12-hour shift after 12-hour shift after 12-hour shift, I finally just felt burned out, used up, like there was just nothing left of me to give. And so I left there and I went to a nursing home, and gosh, that was worse. And so now here I am in home health care. I'm just kind of hoping this won't be awful. And I remember thinking to myself, huh, I don't know if I could make this really good, but surely I could make it not awful. I mean, what if I actually could make it really good? What if I could make our company an employer of choice? What if I could create an environment that shows as much care and compassion for the clinicians as they in turn show for the patients? Well, gosh, if we could do that, I think I could draw in the very best clinicians, because it feels like from everybody's stories that I'm hearing that that's not really the norm in the healthcare space, that we spend a lot of time caring for patients, but nobody cares for the clinicians. And so I really kind of built the whole foundation of my company around this idea of if we could take really good care of our people, they would take really good care of our patients. And so the foundation of our organization to this day is really built around this principle of the phrase, a better way to care. And we say as an organization that our number one job is to provide a better way to care for every person that we interact with, particularly our own team members. Because if we can show that kind of better way to care experience for them by giving them tools, training, and resources, by saying, thank you, I noticed, I appreciate what you're doing, then they'll go out and deliver that experience to patients. And when patients get it, they'll tell people, their doctors, their friends, their neighbors, about the experience, and our reputation will begin to grow in the minds of those referral sources or potential future patients. And that'll help us fulfill our financial goal of growing and building a financial stable future for our company. And it really has proven over the course of the 28 years to be, you know, our, I'm going to call it secret sauce. It's not so secret, but it is hard. It's hard work every day to make sure that all the decisions that we make as a company are made through that filter of how is this a better way to care for my team? Because in business, there's hard decisions that have to be made sometimes. There's hard choices that have to be made. But if you can keep, as a leadership team, that filter of, okay, how am I going to stand up in front of our employees and say, this was a better way to care for you, even though it was a tough decision, even though it was perhaps an unpopular decision, then that's what I'm seeking to do. And I've found that that is a center, a focusing that I can keep in my mind as I make decisions. It's helped me over the years to make better decisions as a result.
April, that's a beautiful story. You know, as we sit here and we're recording this, you know, we're in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, and I want to come back and ask you some questions about that. But before I do, I mean, I hear you saying something that I think is really important. I read something recently by a pastor who was trying to say how we respond to the pandemic. He said, care first and care most. And I hear that in your message to your employees and also how you want to run your company. Take us to where your faith has driven that. And how does your faith be expressed with that attitude?
Yeah, you know, maybe it's because I was 25 and maybe it was because nobody told me I couldn't. But having always been a person of faith, I didn't know you weren't really supposed to be that in the marketplace. And I didn't have a whole lot of that experience outside with larger companies who said, now you kind of got to compartmentalize that part. Can't really bring that to the office. And so without that kind of skewed perspective that so many have from their work environments today, as a young entrepreneur and a person of faith, we just brought that to the office from the beginning. And we've tried to always do that in a way that's not offensive, not trying to use the workplace to evangelize. What I'm trying to do is use the workplace to prove that there are founding principles that, for me, I find in the Bible and in God's word that are good for business. And I always tell people, as you begin to now mention my 28th year in home healthcare, as you start to think about what kind of legacy will I leave in an organization, my hope is that I will be able to prove that you can be wildly successful by being godly in the workplace, by treating people fairly, by doing what's right, by honoring the rules and regulations. And that if you could, in fact, say, if someone could look back on my career and on the businesses we've built and say, well, what made Encompass Health so successful? And our team members will say, well, gosh, we were just always godly in the workplace. We did the right thing. We followed the rules. We were kind to one another. We respected one another. But we were incredibly successful. We grew faster than others. We grew to be now the fourth largest provider of home healthcare services in the nation. We were wildly successful, not in spite of being godly in the workplace, but because of being godly in the workplace. And if we could leave that kind of legacy, would it make somebody say, huh, maybe I want to try that? I've always been told I'm supposed to keep my faith outside of the workplace. But here's a company that professes their success was on the founding principle of being godly in the workplace. What if I could try that in my widget business? Maybe I could be the most successful widget maker by being godly in the workplace, like April was such a successful home healthcare entrepreneur by being godly in her workplace. And if we could challenge people to think differently about where faith should live, and that it shouldn't be compartmentalized to our homes and our families and our churches, but that it should be brought to the marketplace, which is where we have the potential as leaders to have the greatest influence and the greatest impact, what might we be able to do in this world if every company was godly in the workplace? And so that's what inspires me. That's what motivates me. And that's the legacy that I'm trying to build and the legacy that I hope to leave for our company.
Amen. That's inspiring. That's inspiring. Indeed. And, you know, you're a hero of your faith, in my mind, in what we're hearing. And you also get a chance to lead heroes, our healthcare workers right now.
Absolutely.
You've got an insight that many of us, you know, your angle of how you see this, we see it from a different perspective. Take us through what's going on and what it's like to be a healthcare worker right now.
You know, it's such a challenging time because on the one hand, you know, we're dealing with patients that are COVID positive. We're dealing with patients that reside in assisted living facilities, in the case of our hospice service line, that reside in nursing homes, where we all know those facilities have had all kinds of challenges with spread of the virus. And so trying to make sure that our people are able to provide care, but to do so in a way that's safe for them, do so in a way to ensure they don't bring the virus home to their families, is a huge burden. So we've been in a battle every day, particularly in the first 3 or 4 weeks of this pandemic, to try to get personal protective equipment for our team members Thankfully, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, we began to secure enough of that equipment, mostly coming from overseas, to now feel confident that we can send our people out safely, that we're not asking them to take undue risk without that protective equipment. And so we fought that battle. You know, now we're dealing with a whole new battle, which is that, ironically, on the one hand, you would think, gosh, at this time, there must be more patients to serve than ever before. But as you may have heard, our hospitals are all sitting at, most of them, less than 50% occupancy, unless they just happen to be in a couple of those key hot zones. And as a result, there are fewer patients in the hospital than there are fewer patients that are coming out of the hospital to need our home healthcare services. And so we've actually seen our census decline so far by about 12 to 15% from the pre-COVID levels. We think it's actually headed toward a little worse outcome in May. And for the first time since my very first few days in home healthcare, I've had to make a decision that I made on those first days of laying off people. We had to do a similar thing just yesterday. We had to make a decision to make some changes in the way we structure the compensation for our team members in an effort to make sure that we can come out of this crisis on the other side as a still stable and financially viable organization. And boy, that was a hard set of decisions. About 1,000 team members had to take a pay cut of our 12,000 employees. And those are unpopular decisions for almost all cases. And I have definitely seen a mixed bag of responses. Some people who've said, thank you for keeping my job. Thank you for making sure we still have health insurance and opportunity for a paycheck. And others who you might imagine have been unhappy about the compensation adjustments. And, you know, it's the kinds of decisions leaders have to make. When you have really hard times, you have to make courageous decisions. And it would be easy to sit back and let the business basically collapse on this crisis. But that wouldn't be the right thing for our employees. And so I had to, again, put that filter of, okay, how can I do this and say it was a better way to care and really believe it was a better way to care? And so we struggled and grappled as a management team with that decision and came up with something where we felt like we could create a fair opportunity for our team members. Not 100% popular, not at all easy, but nevertheless, one where we were able to, I think, set ourselves up for sustainability on the other side of this pandemic. So, you know, every day is kind of a new battle. I told my husband the other day, sometimes coming to the office today feels like you're a forest firefighter, and you know that you're not going to put the fire out today, but you just got to get out there with the crows anyway and just try to do as best you can to keep it contained, knowing that one day you will finally hit that crossing point and you'll be back on the other side and things will be back into normal. But when you get kind of deep into that forest fire and it just seems like there's no containment, it can get exhausting to be on the front lines of that. And I know that's how our people are feeling, just sort of exhausted by the stress and anxiety of both the danger and yet the risk of their own personal financial situation. So it's an interesting time that I hope to never experience again as a business leader.
I mean, you mentioned the other side. I mean, what do you think the other side looks like? Do we see changes in the healthcare industry, healthcare delivery, the way we think about our public health policies? I mean, from your vantage point, what are you thinking now?
Yeah, I do think there's going to be some changes. I hope some of what we're doing today certainly doesn't become normative. I'm a person who likes to hug and shake hands and embrace people. And so I hope that that happens again, where that can happen on a wide scale basis. But I just do think that for a time, which could be as long as 18, maybe even 24 months, that we're just going to see sort of a new norm in the way that we interact with one another. And I hope that as that happens, that we find ways to connect that are different. We may not be able to connect by wrapping our arms around people and hugging. We may have to connect in other ways. And it's going to take a different level of intentionality. And I think it's going to take a different approach. And I think our healthcare system will change as well. I think never have I been more confident that home healthcare is a really great place to be, because when you think about the spread of viruses, when you think about those facilities that I mentioned where there's congregate living, you know, we have an opportunity in home health care, even if that patient is sick with COVID-19, to take care of them in an isolated fashion where their risk of exposure to others is limited. And so I think home care is going to be a big part of that. I think physician house calls is going to be a growing part of our healthcare system. And I think telemedicine is going to prove to be a growing part of our healthcare system. And so there are things that would have taken probably years to evolve in a normal cycle that are evolving in days and weeks. And so I think there are going to be some good things that'll happen on the other side of this. When you're making that kind of transformative change at that rapid pace, it's hard, it's imperfect, but I do think that it's going to be something that we're going to come out on the other side of it with a little bit different systems, but ones that hopefully allow us to be more cost-effective, help us to have better infection control policies, and help us create a model that's more sustainable for our country's healthcare.
April, I just listened to you talk, and we haven't been fortunate to have a guest, I think, so ingrained in the healthcare system come on the podcast during this crisis. I would just love to ask you, have any encouragement, any encouraging words, any thoughts that you would just kind of tell our listeners as they think about how to love people during this time, think about maybe what God has for us during this time, just as someone who is on the front lines. I would love to know maybe what God could be telling us that we're not seeing.
Yeah, you know, I think that this crisis is, in spite of the fact that it's pushing us apart from a distance perspective, in many ways, I think it's drawing us closer. I think even about, you know, our congregation, like I'm sure most of yours from a worship perspective, is worshiping online. I would have told you 8 weeks ago before that started, that sounded like a really unfulfilling way to worship. And yet, 8 weeks into that, you know, my family gathers sort of at the normal time. I show up in our pajamas instead of our Sunday best, but we're gathering as a family and we're worshiping and we're singing and we're praying and we're having an experience that's not like our normal Sunday experience, but it's an experience that I think we'll always remember. And I think it's an experience that's drawing our family closer together. And I think there's little microcosms of things like that happening. You know, our families play at board games. Our families work at puzzles, our families spending time together with grown children that I thought would only come maybe at an occasional Christmas or holiday that we were together. Now we've got this opportunity to spend quality time, and it doesn't have to be sitting in front of a screen watching a TV show or listening to the redundancy of the news all day. We've all said enough of that. Let's do something else. And so whether it's the way that we're interacting with our families, my mother, of course, is a little bit more isolated as a senior. She doesn't have the freedom to feel comfortable about getting out and about. But even with her, we've been able to go and, you know, bring our lawn chairs and sort of sit at a distance and yet make sure that we're taking care of her and being with her, not only delivering her groceries and other things, but just sitting down and talking without the distractions of some of the normal pace of life. So I think there's some good that is certainly coming from that, but I think it's a level of intentionality that we have that maybe in our busy pre-COVID lives, we had sort of gotten away from. And everybody was going their own direction. It sort of brought us anyway as a family back together, even with our grown children.
Amen. Amen. Thank you for sharing that. And as we do come to a close, I would love to just ask, we'd love to see how God connects our listeners and our guests through his word and through his scripture. And we would love to, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us a piece of God's word that may be coming alive to you during the season, could be today, just any place in your life that he may be speaking to you in a new way.
Yeah, so I guess I'm going to bring it back to a way that he's speaking to me in an old way, because I've told our team here at Encompass, gosh, so many times that the verse on which I founded my current company, and I didn't kind of tell the interim story, but my first company I owned from 1992 to 97, I sold it to a public company and they proceeded to wreck it in short order and ended up filing bankruptcy about a year and a half after I sold it to them and terminating all of my employees that had been there and just really making a mess out of it and sort of leaving me feeling uncertain where to go. And when I started this company, my current company, I did so really with this verse on my heart from Jeremiah that we're all probably familiar with that says, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, and plans to give you hope and future. And, you know, I think that verse is what I've told my team over the years, the now 22 years that we've been running this business, is that's the verse that this company was founded on. And it was founded at a time when the home healthcare industry was in a bit of a kind of a shambles, when my own personal career had kind of, you know, gone off the rails after having sold my business. But even in that moment, knowing that this verse is true, that it doesn't always happen immediately, just as it didn't in its original time, but that if you will just be true to God. You'll be true to his promises that over time, he will bring you through any challenges and that he will not let you be harmed, but in turn will prosper you. And I've reminded our team, even in the course of this pandemic, of that founding verse that our company was founded on. So I think that that is, for me, not new wisdom, but old wisdom, but wisdom that is proven to lead us through the past 22 years and that I'm particularly confident will lead us through the current crisis.
April, that was awesome. What a great way to end. What a great encouragement. What a great example for all of us who have employees and how to love on them better so that they in turn might love the end customer better. And just powerful story from that moment when you saw that caregiver, that your employee, give that patient a big hug. And that feels just particularly poignant right now, maybe because it's harder to do that with people. And yet, I think that that's what God has designed us to do. And I look forward to your employees being able to do more of that. I love the fact that you are running a business and encouraging other people to be the hands and feet of Christ at scale as they love people. And it's just a special business that you've run for a long time. Great opening story. And thanks for bringing us home with what God continues to tell you.
Very good. Thanks for having me. And everybody take care and be safe.
As we finish up, we'd like to spotlight a ministry that is locking arms with our listeners. We know that you're looking to be on mission in all of your life. God has given all of us families, time, talent, and treasure all to steward. One of the most often overlooked areas is where we invest our money. Tragically, Christians control more than half the world's wealth, yet many of us are missing the chance to invest in things that deliver financial return and can make a spiritual impact. So this week, we want to make sure everyone knows about the faith-driven investor. Whether you're a fund manager, a professional investor, or someone looking to put money to work in your retirement fund, it's a weekly podcast, a monthly newsletter, a daily blog that will help you understand that God owns it all and he cares deeply about how we steward what he's entrusted to us. You can check it out at faithdriveninvestor.org.
Thanks so much for joining us on today's show. We hope you enjoyed it. We are very grateful for the opportunity to serve you, the larger faith-driven entrepreneur community, and we want to stay connected. The best way for you to do that is to sign up for our monthly newsletter at faithdrivenentrepreneur.org. And while you're there, we want to hear from you. We derive great joy from interacting with many of you, and it's been very rewarding to see people come to the site and listen to the podcast now from more than over 100 countries. But it's even more important to us that you feel like this is your show and that you'll help make it something that best equips you on your entrepreneurial journey, one that you're proud of and one that you're going to share with others. Hey, this podcast wouldn't be possible without the help from many of our friends, executive producer Justin Foreman and program director Johnny Wills. Music is by Carl Kegwell. You can see and hear more of his work at summerdregs.com. Audio and editing by Richard Barley of Cornerstone Church in San Francisco.